Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. I'm your host, Sam Kamani, and on today's episode, I am interviewing Rishabh Gupta. He is from TDFi. So TDFi is like an accelerator and an incubator that helps Web3 founders, blockchain founders, crypto founders to launch their startup. They advise them on tokenomics, they advise them and work with them on their product, and they do not charge a fee, they do not take a percent of the equity in the startup. They are really founder friendly. I think all founders should know about this accelerator incubator, and today I'm going to be asking him all things about things like tokenization, what mistakes founders make, what you should be watching out for, looking out for, where he thinks the industry is going, as well as what is his contrarian view when it comes to all things crypto, DeFi, blockchain, Web3. Also, I do not run any ads on my podcast. My only ask is that you share this episode with someone on your social media, and nothing in this podcast should be taken as investment advice. I make sure to not talk about token prices. There are no token prices of any token mentioned in this podcast. This is purely to learn about what is happening in this industry and how founders can build better startups, can grow them faster, and be more successful. With that out of the way, let's get into it. So welcome, Rishabh. It's great to have you on the show. Looking forward to speaking with you. I've been researching about your background. You guys have worked with so many crypto projects or Web3 projects in the last few years, and you have so much experience, a wealth of experience. So my first question for you is, how did you get involved in the field of blockchain, crypto, Web3?
Lovely. Thank you so much, Sam, for having me. Namaste to everyone. I'm Rishabh, and it has been a great journey so far. And I'm really optimistic about what's going to happen in the next 10 years. We are at the verge of creating an industry. Rather, the industry has already been created now. So it has been an amazing journey of seeing its ups and downs, of the governments first rejecting it, then accepting it, of adoption from a couple of million users to 400 plus million unique wallets that are being created today. So it has been a fantastic journey. And it's a pleasure to be here today to talk about what we have been through and what we plan for the next few years. As for myself, my journey goes back. I come from India. I did my engineering, and after engineering, started working with the first ever or the largest Decacon of country called Oyo Rooms, which became the fastest Decacon funded by SoftBank and the top VCs of the world. After being there for a couple of years, that's where my journey and interest in startup really started. I did my master's in business administration from one of the IITs of India. And that's where, during my postgrad, I was working on a regression algorithm of finding the relations between multiple variables. And someone gave me a problem of, look into Bitcoin and look at how it is, like how the prices are changing. Could you do a relation or an expression to predict that, like a predictive algorithm? And that's where, for the first time, I came across Bitcoin white paper. And as soon as I read the white paper, I never looked back. The reason was, we have seen 2008. We have seen so many other incidents when, because of a single point of failure, the entire system crashed. And yes, the people who were not even at fault, who were the people that were actually holding the money because of the trust, had to suffer a lot. And I read that white paper. I said, man, this is it. This is the future of money. This is exactly how the money would look like in 10 years from now. And from there onwards, I started reading more about Ethereum. I started reading more about other crypto assets. The blockchain is a technology. And I met Gaurav. Now, Gaurav was running a family office in Dubai called O1EX back in 2018. And I met Gaurav and the team. And that's where I started working with him as an investment analyst. My job was to look out for the best deals, invest in them, do the due diligence. So from day one in crypto, my job was to talk to founders, work with these founders, understand their challenges, understand the market landscape. This became the initiation of my love to the founders. Now, to summarize, this was my journey, and this is what I do today as a part of TDFI.
That's fantastic. So what type of projects does TDFI invest in?
Yeah, sure. Okay, I'll quickly give you the context of TDFI as well. So this family office that was only investing back in 2016, 2017, and was only deploying capital.
Yes.
But after the bear run of 2018, these founders that we were working with, we identified that there is a gap. And the gap is that, okay, capital, very easily available. We all know that when it's bull market, the capital that flows in these markets is unmatchable to any other markets and the kind of the growth of capital that flows in this market. However, the problems that the founders were facing was not just capital. The problem they were facing was pretty simple, and I put it in very simple terms. When you are tokenizing a startup, when you're tokenizing a company rather, what you're saying is that the value of the company, which was earlier being represented by a share of the company, is now will be represented by the non-dilutive token. Yeah. So 1% of the tokens today would always mean 1% of tokens tomorrow. However, that doesn't change the fact that the value of the company is now being represented by the token itself. So essentially, what's important and critical is that if you have to grow the product, the business, and the token together, you have to make sure that the value that your business generates has to be transmitted into the token and has to be felt by the perceived by the holder of the token, that value has to be perceived by the holder so that the adoption increases, so that the value increases, so that the value flows into the business more and hence grows the business. Now, this sounds like too easy, right? You just have to represent the value. However, you look at the token models, you look at the top 1,000 tokens today, there are and zillions of tokens listed already. When you look at the token models and you would find there is no correlation. There is no relation between how you build an economics of a token to how the business works. And I put it in a very funny way. People have tried their best to build a business around a token, which has failed. Yes. We as TDFI are trying to build, are always aiming or striving to build a token model around a business. So no matter what happens in this world, you cannot generate value out of thin air. You cannot say that, okay, guys, look, there is a token and boom, you buy this, sell this, and that's it. No, you have to generate value. There has to be productivity. There has to be a produce in that value in the business. And 100%. That value has to be represented by a token. So this problem, when we identified as a fund, we said, okay, this problem has to be solved. And the only way to solve this problem is to get our hands dirty, which is get on the side of the founders, tell them, guys, you take care of the product. Let us help you build a token model. And the reason we could do that is because we were already evaluating companies and already working, investing in startups and token companies since 2015, 2016. So that experience brought us to start TDFI. So yeah. I think I've also summarized the problem that we're solving is we are helping the founders in making sure that there is a clear parallel drawn between the business and their token.
Yeah, that makes sense. I have so many questions. Let me just get started. So you incubate these startups or you accelerate them. How does that model work? Do the founders reach out to you? Do you have demo days? How does it all work?
Yeah, so we don't work on a cohort-based model. We feel that cohort-based model for crypto startups is too less of a time because token economics. So like I said, to summarize, TDFI has an expertise in token economics, but token engineering, designing incentive mechanisms for a token, which would bring more users adoption, creating enough retention intensive incentives for these users to be loyal to the system, and then reward all the participants of that business, of that system, of that product in tokens. So now this cannot be a 2-month or a 3-month program. This cannot be a 6-month program. This will evolve over a period of time. Things will change, things will evolve, and accordingly you will have to evolve. Now you cannot, as a business, cannot define all the utilities of the token when you are building a pitch deck. Because unless, you know, as a product, it always evolves. So you have to define the principles of how the token will be allocated. You have to peg the token flow to the cash flow of the business. So to cater to all of this, we don't run cohort-based programs. We run a lifetime of incubation program. Once we start working with the founder, we are always working with them. The scope of work keeps on changing, and there is no fees throughout the cycle. It's a sort of, a recurring fee. No, there's no recurring fee or anything. There is no fee involved as a matter of fact. We don't take any fees from the founders. We invest in those founders rather. So our investment itself is the biggest fees that we have, because that way we will be making sure that our investments are also secured by making sure that the product is growing well. This is a lifetime of incubation program where we keep on working with the founders. We meet these founders in different events, different conferences. We talk to them. We identify where can we add value. So one principle that we have developed as TDFI since the first day is we only invest and work with companies that has a need of our value addition, right? Mm-hmm. We have an ecosystem, an infrastructure to execute. So that is where we start working with these companies. So that I think, and then obviously these companies reach out to us as well through LinkedIn, through our website is pretty detailed. So they can always come and apply to our websites. Our DD team will get in touch with them. And we make sure that every founder gets a reply within first 3 days of their application. This is our rule as a company. We don't want to keep a founder hanging. Oh, you know what? We'll let you know. No, we don't. We
that
always,
is so
always
good.
Make sure.
That is a breath of pressure to hear, because I know the number of founders who are so sick of being ghosted. It's okay to get no. You can move on.
Absolutely. We don't ghost them.
Next person and then next person.
Absolutely.
And then you can keep going, keep moving. Yeah. Your funding process further. But if you never get a no, you never get a yes, you don't know where you stand. So that could be very annoying.
Absolutely. Ghosting is not an option for us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we have made our processes and SOPs. We call TDFI we want to make it operationally so efficient that we have made it operationally efficient so that now every founder gets a reply within 3 days of their application, whether it's a yes or a no, or whether we have further questions, so we continue the DD process.
Oh, fantastic. And you take a small equity stake in the company, or how does it work?
So our investments that we do is our stake in the company. We don't invest primarily, we don't look at equity. We are believers of the decentralization, and we are a believer of tokenization. And hence, we take a token allocation only for the incubation.
Oh, fantastic. That is really good to hear. I have got a few more questions. So these founders, these companies, do they have to be pre-TGE or pre-token generation event? Or can they be startups that have already launched a token and they realize that they have made mistakes, they could use some help, and then can they come to you, or is it too late?
No, it's never too late to work with TDFI. Obviously, now we are not magicians that we can resurrect a dead business. But yes, it's never too late to work with us. And because we didn't get a chance to also touch upon another point about TDFI. Now, TDFI was always built with a principle of execution. We don't believe in only ideation. I heard CZ saying this as well in one of the stages, CZ from Binance, that their company is built on 95% execution and 5% ideation. So that's something I would say. TDFI is built over 99% execution and 1% ideation. Jokes apart. The reason we do that is because we believe that only execution can change the game. Right? Fast execution, quick execution, right execution can change the game. So now to execute things on tokenization, we have built an infrastructure. That infrastructure includes, we invested in a few companies, and all of these companies comes under a common group called as TradeDog Group. So TDFI stands for TradeDog DeFi, essentially started as an incubator, but TradeDog Group is an holding entity that holds TDFI.
Yeah.
That also holds a market maker that also holds a public launchpad, and a venture capital arm that purely invests in the companies.
Yeah.
And then we also have a hackathon platform through which we host hackathons to develop and to help entrepreneurs at a very early stage, from colleges, universities, at a very even school level who are working on the concept of decentralization. It's a platform, it's a boot camp for these early entrepreneurs. It's a free initiative. There's no charge for it. We just do it for the community. So all of these group companies are a part of TradeDog Group. Now, if you look at all of these as a market maker, as a launchpad, all of these are execution infrastructure to help the token startups at every stage of their life cycle, from pre-TGE to TGE to post-TGE and to 2 years after TGE as well. So if there's a company that is saying, okay, guys, we made a mistake in tokenomics, and now we have launched and we see that the value is not being transmitted, could you help us there? That's where we come in. We do an audit of the tokenomics. We create an audit report of what mistakes did you do and how can you correct those mistakes? And now who do you need the most? If you need liquidity in the market, we would ask our market maker to start working on those markets, to create liquidity in the markets, to make the markets efficient for the traders by giving them the right order books, then creating the order books, creating liquidity that would attract traders. Then if they are a TGE and they have already raised funds and they want to build a community, that's where we bring our launchpad in utility, which could help them in conducting a public sale. At the same time, build a community of the project by bringing those project on spaces, bringing them to introducing them to influencers, KOLs that would create an audience for them through their audience. So that's during TGE. And in case they are pre-TGE, yes, that's where we come in. We engage our token engine team to work with their to build tokenomics. And that would be working on their token economic models, design frameworks, and so on and so forth. Everything related to token. That's a perfect place to start for TDFi, because that way we can make things start right from the very beginning itself.
Oh, that's fantastic. What's this market making firm called? Because I know some market making firms already. So is it like an independent firm, or is it just works purely with TDFi startups?
No, it's an independent firm. But being a group company, we do make sure that the companies incubated at TDFi does get access to them. And because we are, as TDFi, we are at the mediation for them. So we make sure that they get the best services, they get the best results. But it's called TDMM. It's called TradeDog Market Maker. Sakhar Erikat, who is the co-founder of Crypto Oasis and one of the very eminent figures from Dubai, is the CEO.
Yeah, I met people from Crypto. Oh, sorry, who did you say? Sakhar, is it?
Yes.
I know Sakhar. I had lunch with him in Dubai.
Sakhar is the CEO of TDMM. Very nice.
Very cool. Yeah, I've been to some of his events as well, and he's very well connected. Yeah, very good guy. So I've got some mutual friends with him as well. This is non-crypto friends that I had mutual friends. That's how I got connected to Sakhar. But such a small world. Like this whole crypto world is
absolutely
very small.
Very small.
Everyone knows everyone. I have some more questions with the TDMM. Do you have your own software, as in like for TDFi or for market making, or do you use another company for that, or another software? And if that is, then what do you use?
No, it's an IP. It's a proprietary engine built by TDMM over. So the TDMM team comes with a heavy experience of financial markets of 15 plus years. So they learned their skills, trick and trade of the business very well. And now they have built this engine. So it's proprietary to them. We just make sure that they provide the best services to the projects that we work with as TDFi.
I have written down one more question, because when I was just doing some research on you on LinkedIn, and I saw that how you have helped so many projects with their tokenization and part of tokenization, and having a successful token is launch as well as continuing it is having liquidity. And so I just have my question is, what are the main pain points when it comes to liquidity and trading tokens?
Very nice question. In fact, I think 100% of the founders have this question in their mind. And the biggest pain point is when you are, as a founder, are not focused on and don't understand or rather underestimate the fact that your users are not essentially your token holders. The token holders and users might have an intersection point, but if they might not have an intersection point as well. So when you launch a token, token is a publicly traded asset. When you launch a token in the market, you will have to make sure that the traders that are speculating on the price of the token, the traders that are believing in the fundamental business of the product and are then speculating on the price of the token, needs to see that the markets are always liquid, efficient, and are able to cater to their orders.
Yeah.
When you launch a token and then you say, okay, I think the markets will take care of itself, let me just focus on the product, that's where you lose the audience. That's where you lose the market, and that's where the liquidity starts going down and down, and then there is a domino effect that happens.
Yes.
So if you are launching a publicly traded asset, you have to understand that you are now obligated to cater to these traders and investors. And you have to make your markets liquid. So you have to talk to the community. You always have to transmit the value that is being generated in the business to the token holders. You have to employ market makers, which would help you to build the markets initially till the time, till you get enough traction that now organic liquidity comes into action. So all of this is, or rather I would say, organic. Even if you have organic liquidity from day one, it is important that it is well structured. Your markets shouldn't look like straight green line and a straight red line. The market should always be able to cater to the trader sentiment, the trader's triggering points, and their technical analysis patterns. Mm-hmm. So I think that is one of the pain points that I've seen, that the founders are not focused on focusing or emphasizing, or rather taking care of their token markets. They're saying, okay, we take care of the product, the token will take care of itself on its own. Unfortunately, no.
I feel like running a token is running a company in itself.
And so absolutely.
You end up with two businesses. One is the token business and the other one is the product business, that you need to create a useful product that adds value to people. And often people drop their ball in one or the other. I feel like
I would say rather that's where TD5 fills the gap, to bridge these values so that you don't have to run two businesses. You run a business, you run one business, and let the token design and the token economics and the token liquidity bridge the gap between that business and the token.
Yeah, that's very cool. I'm just going through, I have a very different question. It's about market making, because you live in this world. And I always thought that if you hire, I felt like market making ideally should be done by the team itself. So they should educate themselves, get the correct software and run it themselves rather than going externally. And if there's a completely external market maker, it's in their interest. And if they are getting paid in tokens, to do a pump and dump type of a scenario. So I feel like there is like a conflict of interest. Is that true? That's first part of the question. And second part of the question is, what mistakes do you see people make when going to market makers?
Great questions. To be honest, the first question is a very interesting one, and not a lot of people have asked me this question, but I would definitely take this opportunity to answer this. Imagine you're a founder. You have been a founder, obviously. So imagine there is a founder and they're working day and night on their business, day and night, right? And they're making the ends meet. They are toiling very hard to make sure that the business is running really well. However, let's assume the markets are bearish, the capital injection is not happening well, and the founders have some capital in their treasury. Mm-hmm. But the token is not going up because, for whatever reasons, because of the markets. Mm-hmm. However, the founders are really working hard on their business. What do you think would be the first step of the founder, psychologically speaking?
Founders will get stressed that token is not going high,
they might put
some more money in and try and buy. And
exactly, thank you so much.
Yes,
they would get stressed. They would get flow with the sentiment. They would flow with the sentiments. They would get emotional with their token. They would get attached with their token, and then they would start manipulating the markets.
Yes,
they would start buying the tokens on their own. They would start burning their operational capital, and they will end up dead in the next few months.
Yes.
The reason, that is why, that's the number one reason. Number two reason, it's not also compliant. A founder cannot be a market maker because founders don't have the necessary skills or the licenses, rather, to manage the markets and not manipulate the markets. It comes under markets manipulation. So that's why you need a third party that could be, that is unbiased, that understands, that is skilled enough to understand the markets, that is skilled enough to put the liquidity where the mouth is, to that is skilled enough to make sure that your markets are can sustain itself for a long term and not becomes a pump and dump scheme for some people and doesn't end up with a dried up liquidity. So that's why founders should not do their market making on their, even if they are the best, they should not do it. Even if they're coming from that experience, they should not do it, because psychology and emotions can overpower and dominate all the experience in this world.
Right? That's so, understand. Emotion. Yes.
Emotions are, emotion is a dragon that can burn up anything.
Yes.
Now, to answer the second part of the question where you said, could you repeat the
second part? Yes, the second part was, where do you see people making mistakes when it comes to market makers? What should they look for as a good market maker?
Yes. Number one, don't look for bots. Don't look out for bots. If today a 21-year-old boy coming out of college can create a bot and say, okay, buy, sell, and throw the buy and sell orders. But do you think that would solve the problem? They don't understand trading. They don't understand how a trader would think. So how would they even create an order book that would be attracted to traders? So first things first, you need an experienced financial market expert who has done this in the past, who understands markets, who have dealt with high volumes, and who could and who have seen the token markets evolving, so they can predict the emotions of the market and the sentiments of the market. And that would, so that's number one. So find a team that has the experience and expertise. That's number one. Number two, find a team that is transparent in nature and not opaque in nature. Today, there are hundreds of market makers that would say, okay, give us a token, give us the tokens at a loan and option model, where you would be essentially giving them the ownership of the tokens, which means they will have the right to do whatever they want with the tokens with no transparency to you as a team. As a team, you need to be you need to have a look at what's happening in the markets. Your CFO should know what's happening with the tokens, how many tokens are coming out in the market, what is the sell pressure, are we looking at extra selling pressure, are we looking at a lot of buy pressure, what is happening in the market. So transparency is important. So those two principles could actually make you choose the right market maker always.
That's good. That's really good. And also,
and that is the, and it goes without saying that we have built both our market making company on these principles as the fundamentals.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. I have another out of field question, and that is, what is your contrarian view when it comes to all things DeFi, trading, also centralized finance, or all these sort of things?
So, my contrarian view to the existing narratives that are trending today in the markets is that people think that crypto markets have matured and now it will be driven by fundamentals. I believe that it is still too early for the crypto markets to be compared to the largest markets of the world. And it's, although the growth of crypto markets has been exemplary, no other industry has been able to show that.
Yes.
However, it is still largely driven by sentiments and how the institutions look at the markets, right? Yes. So this is going to change. This is definitely going to change. The fundamentals will be changing. But for that, we would need more use case adoption. Instead of the metrics that we follow today is how many wallets are there in the markets, are trading in the markets, or how many unique active wallets are there. I would say how many active users are there that are using the products. That would define the real strength of the markets. So I would rather calculate that metrics than the trading metrics only. Because to gain adoption, to become the future of money, just trading wouldn't be sufficient. That you cannot be just an asset that is just being traded. there has to be, the technology has to have a large adoption in terms of users that are using the products.
Yeah.
So I think that's two. One, the second view is we are so much blindly following that, okay, let's just create more and more technical products, and that we have forgotten that we are talking about an audience that has less than 1% or 2% of technology understanding or technology friendly or other technology experts that could understand the product. We need to build products. We need to have a UX. We need to create products that doesn't create a hindrance for any average user around the world, be it from USA, be it from Asia, or be it from Africa, that they could simply go and use the product without thinking about, oh, I have to get, what is a MetaMask? What is an uncustodian? What is custodian? I don't have to get that education. As a user, I just want to use a product. As a user, I have to just get money or lend money or earn yields or play a game. So focus on that. Don't focus on let's do this and then create a derivative of X and then created another derivative of X and then give you 200% returns. No, it's not going to happen.
Yes, very true. I'm just thinking, like, I was just talking with Aperture Finance, and oh man, and I often talk with CTOs, and the number of amount of jargon that they use, they have no one can understand. Even people in the crypto industry, probably half of them cannot understand, because if you are like so knee deep into it for the last 5 years, that's all you've done. And I was like, how do you explain it to your family? He say they have absolutely no idea. He was in US, but even then he's saying they have absolutely no idea. They still ask him, so do you still work for Bitcoin? He say, yeah, I still work for Bitcoin. and it is very, and you were saying that, and it's like it's in DeFi, there's so much going on, but it feels like there's all these people in US who just get multiple credit cards and they move points from here one place to another place and just try and get some, and then there's so many people are doing that at the moment, points farming and then airdrop farming, and there's 100 different versions of different types of farming and all that, and everyone's, people who are in that field, they have got like multiple wallets and moving things from one to the other and doing all sorts of shuffling around, which to an outside person means nothing. None of these terms that they're using. And so it's, I don't think that is the, as you said, I completely agree with your view that it has not matured. We are far from it still. Yeah, this is not the decentralization that this.
Absolutely, it is going to take some time, but we are moving really fast. That's really no other industry in this world. I don't know of any industry in the history that has been able to move as fast as this, as crypto. Less than how many? 6-7 years. I won't even count until 2015, the things when people didn't even know about it. Counting those 5 years doesn't make sense. But for me, let's say nine years and we are $3 trillion already in crypto. So this is really good. This is really fast growth.
Oh, it's not only that. It's just the number of solutions that are being built and the amount of progress that is happening. And even the type of people who work in this, they move a lot faster. And because this industry has decentralization at its core, people are open to working with people from any country in the world.
And
so
absolutely,
you get access to the best and the smartest people. The reason that what attracted me to crypto and Web3 and blockchain and all this was that the smartest people were working in this tech, and they still do. So that's why it's like, for a field like AI, it is 80 years old. Alan Turing was working on it like so many like decades ago. It's not new, AI, and AI doesn't move as fast as crypto. So that's just I use AI products every single day. I build my own MVPs. I build my own agents. I train my own models, but still, yeah, crypto moves very fast. And there is a lot of concentration of money. But yeah, just going back to infrastructure as a service or a SaaS product to help with DeFi, are there any particular products that are outside of your ecosystem that you have seen that you really like, that you feel like they are solving problems in DeFi?
Yeah, definitely. There are, for example, take of MakerDAO. That protocol itself has not only solved the problem, but has proven to the world that decentralized lending and borrowing, money markets rather, exist, and not only exist, but actually can be scaled. Now there are pension funds that have given them millions of dollars that are earning yields from those protocols. So it is definitely happening. Then we are seeing invoice financing, revenue financing, coming to a decentralized ecosystem where all the invoices are getting verified, all the revenues that are being clocked, all the receivables are being audited, and that's being put on blockchain. So they're immutable. And then they are receiving loans from liquidity to generate liquidity providers that is generating yields now. So it's these, there are definitely products outside of our ecosystem that are doing really well as well, that I think these are the ones that I would say. But in terms of, let's look at Vulcan Forged, you know, it's one of our portfolio companies, but that is how you build a community. That is how you build a game, from a building a gaming studio to building millions of users playing that, and then facilitating all of those other games to come on their chain called Elysium. This is fantastic traction that's coming on board.
Yeah, I have heard of Elysium. I completely agree with you on that. And yeah, I do think that there'll be more and more games that will get adoption, but we are still very early and it takes years and years to build a good game. So
absolutely. I think in terms of game, I definitely want to add one point. I've been saying this since ever. You cannot replace a gameplay experience with extra rewards.
Yeah.
Extra rewards will create incentives, can create adoption and can multiply the adoption. Gameplay experiences is irreplaceable. So what I'm seeing right now with Web3 gaming, by the way, I'm a very hardcore believer of that Web3 gaming will be the point, is the only sector that can bring the next billion users on board.
Yes.
Because it's easy. It's very easy. You don't even let the user know what's happening and they start playing. And then eventually, you know, what happens is they start getting the tokens, they get used to it, they get educated about it, and boom, you have a user now, a crypto user now. However, because the founders are getting in the race of raising funds, what they are doing is they are ending up building games for raising funds and not for the gamers. And that has spoiled the whole. That's a bummer. That's a big bummer. And hence the gamers are not liking those games.
Yeah.
So that's one thing which Web3 gaming needs to change. They need to focus on the gameplay experience. And
if you want to build a long-term sustainable game, you have to build a good game to keep people's interest alive, or it's not going to survive. But it is very hard to build a game. Even with AAA studios, they've got tens of thousands, sometimes 20, 30,000 employees, and they spend 3-5 years, they spend $1 billion and still they get flops. So
absolutely.
It's not that easy to build a really good experience that people really enjoy. So it's not even just throwing money. And sometimes people, like four people, built Palworld, and that's got millions and millions of users. At any point, there's more than 1 million people playing. So it just shows that it's a lot more. And a lot of the games that did become big in 2023, like Among Us and all that, they didn't have 3D 4K graphics. They had... But the
absolutely,
experience
yeah.
was good. It's like we people still play cards and they don't have 4K graphics when we play cards and things like that at home. But it is fun. So as long as you can deliver a fun experience.
Fun experience. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Rightly said. We don't need metaverse avatars or like 4D avatars or 6D avatars. We need a good experience. And that's what would change. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. This brings me to, what's the biggest challenge for you for DDFi at the moment?
I don't see a lot of, I wouldn't say that there is any challenge, because the way we have evolved over the last few years we have built our ecosystem, we have built our access to the large institutions, to the governments. We are a licensed incubator by DMCC. Which is the largest free zone of Dubai as well. We run acceleration cohorts there as an initiative of the community initiative for the founders. It's a 2-month program or a 1-month program, but it's a free program. It's a community initiative that we run there. In terms of this, because of so much of wrong education has been spread about tokens, what we are doing or what we're facing is instead of firstly working with the founders, the first thing that we have to educate these founders.
Yes.
About the challenges that they could face going through the journey that they are opting for, where there is a gap between the token and the product, where a lot of founders don't fail to understand the power of incentives, right?
Yeah.
They would, I'm not sure if you have read this book, but there's this autobiography of Les Schwab, who is one of the entrepreneurs that built tire centers across the states. So he says, and Charlie Munger, the late Charlie Munger, quotes him and says, the power of incentives is so much so that every day you learn more about it. And yeah. this is what he said when he was 92 years old, Mr. Charlie Munger, that every day I wake up and see that there is more to the incentives that I've learned until yesterday. And this is one of the ways where token, and you can easily see that how incentives have been able to create an adoption for an industry that in 7 years or 8 years, we yes. are now at a point of so many startups being built, so many capital being flowing in.
Yes.
Right. So this is one thing which founders needs to understand about how they should be implementing the right incentive practices.
Yes.
So I think these are some points. And then obviously the quick gains dilemma. A lot of founders are going ahead with providers that promises or assures them on quick gains. Let's understand the fact that you cannot money mint when you're out of thin air. If you want to build a company which is $1 billion in worth today, it is going to take you a few years to do that. It is definitely going to take some time. So don't rush into that. Build a sustainable business and find the right people who understand your vision. That is more important than a quick gain today.
Yeah, 100% agree. So much, so many good points you said right there. Yeah, but that brings me to my last question, looking at the time. And that is, do you have an ask? Is that anything you're looking for? Are you looking to hire? Are you raising next fund for your venture? Anything else? If you're looking for any software, any people to collaborate with, feel free to share.
Absolutely. So we always say this, we never hire when we need someone. We always hire when we find the right person.
Yes.
So we are always hiring. We are definitely looking out for people that understands the vision, number one, that are passionate to work with founders. That's our base minimum criteria, that you should be passionate to work with founders. The skills can be learned. We don't look at the skills so much, but we look at the passion. So that's one. Secondly, if there are founders that are listening to this podcast and would want to understand more, we do get on calls. We don't have ask. We can definitely get on calls where we could understand their problem, offer them, give them a suggestion or our experience. Rather, I would put it this way. We'll be happy to share our experience with them if they would want to understand where were the mistakes that they made, what can they do better, and so on and so forth. So I think that's more than enough. And thirdly, yes, we are going to launch our acceleration program with DMCC very soon. Keep checking the TD5 website and you can find the application link there.
Oh, fantastic. I will put all the links that you mentioned. I'll get from your assistant and I'll put all those links in the show notes wherever this goes, so founders can find you. And thank you so much for your time. And I just want to wish you best of luck. We need to have a catch up again and see in 6 months' time or in a year's time how the industry has changed when it comes to DeFi and all sorts of projects launching their DDEs and all that. I did have this question, but I didn't get a chance to ask. I feel like I still have maybe one or two more minutes.
And absolutely, go ahead.
What's
no worries.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. What's your opinion on over the next 10 months or so? There's all sorts of people saying things in the market. There's a lot of hope and optimism at the moment because of Bitcoin ETFs, because of the halving, because of all those sort of things. Yeah, what's your opinion?
I think I'm not very much affected by halving, to be honest. The reason being, we're not a 2-year-old market that things would change suddenly. People know this for years, last 4 years, that halving is going to happen in 2024. So why do we expect like a crazy changes after halving? That news should already have been
factored in the price.
Created its impact, factored in the prices already,
yeah.
Right? But ETFs, that has changed the game. Now, there is a point where there is a future for all the other tokens. Today, we have an ETF for Bitcoin only. But do you think that's the end game?
No, there will be
tomorrow we'll have Ethereum, then we have
Ethereum ETFs and Solana ETFs. I did hear somewhere about people working on it
Not sure
already.
about Solana. Not sure about Solana, but ETH ETFs, yes. And this is just the beginning, because as soon as you have one financial instrument, there'll be more funds. There'll be more financial instruments that would be looking at the top 20, top 50, top 100. And that is the future of where we can expect trillions of dollars of the TradFi capital being flowing in the crypto ecosystem, which means crypto as an asset class. And all of that capital would be helping new innovations to be created, new models to be created, which would change the game again, which would make things decentralized, which would bring transparency. So I think I'm very optimistic because of these ETFs and institutional capital. So I think, and because of the 2 years of bear market, there is a lot of dry powder, right? And VCs and institutions have a pressure of creating returns on their capital. They cannot just hold it, right? So that dry powder is definitely going to flow in, which makes it even more bullish and optimistic in the next 9 to 12 months.
Will your venture arm raise another fund in the near future, or you guys are
We
well
haven't,
on
no, we
lifting?
haven't, liquidity is not a problem for us. We are fortunate to have that liquidity and invest as much as we want and grow as much as we want. Liquidity is not a concern. As far as raising is concerned, I think I would, no plans as of now. But like we always say, that strategic partners and strategic people, we are always hungry for strategic and right people, right? As professionals, if you are a person, if you would like to join and talk to us, we are very happy to have a chat, but we are not raising right now.
Well, that's fantastic. That's really good to know. And thank you for sharing everything about DeFi as well as industry insights, that there are very few people who are as qualified as you when it comes to all this stuff. So thank you once again. And yeah, wish you best of luck.
Thank you so much, Sam. It was absolutely a pleasure being on this podcast.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening or watching this episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. By now, you know the drill. Leave a comment or share this episode with a friend and leave a review. I would love to hear from you. So that's why my DMs are open. Reach out to me, especially if you are a founder building a product in Web3. Then I would love to hear from you. What are your challenges? Is there anything that I can help you or my community can help you with? Thank you once again and wish you best of luck in building your startup or your project.